All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest on the show is Patrick Coburn. He's the author of the book Muqtada, and he's a foreign correspondent for The Independent. That's independent.co.uk, and of course, also writes for Counterpunch. Welcome to the show, Patrick. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today from merry old England across the ocean there. I guess let's start with the bad news. At least 64 Iraqis killed in major bombings, yesterday and this morning, according to, well, Fox Top of the Hour News. They could have their day wrong. But apparently 169 wounded, and this is, it says here at news.antiwar.com, the attacks came amid a major pilgrimage, saw hundreds of thousands of Shiites in the streets. Other major attacks targeted Awakening Council members in Abu Ghraib and soldiers in Fallujah. What is going on in Iraq? I thought the surge worked.
Well, I guess, you know, American soldiers aren't being killed. But unfortunately, Iraqis have gone on being killed in large numbers. You know, people often say to ask me, you know, how is Iraq and is it better? And, you know, it is better, even with 64 dead, because we used to have 3,000 dead every month. You know, but it's still horrendous compared to anywhere else. And, you know, these attacks are purely, very largely on civilians, on, as you said, pilgrims. It's a Shia festival, a purely sectarian attacks by extreme Sunni groups on Shia pilgrims.
Now, it can't be, tell me, it can't be that the Sunni bombers who would do something like this are just... you know, out to get Shiite Islam. I mean, this is political. These are human beings on the ground, and they're trying to get some kind of reaction or you know, it's a tactic toward some sort of policy change of one kind or another, right? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was always, you know, what happened was that, you know, under Saddam Hussein, Iraq was predominantly run by the Sunni Arabs, which is about 20% of the population. Then when the U.S. invaded, there was a takeover by the Shia, who are about 60%, and the Kurds. Now, the insurgency was always partly anti-American, but it also was anti-Shia government. And often this just takes the form of slaughtering ordinary Shia civilians. Of course, one of the things that makes Iraqi politics really toxic is that the Shia, you know, while this is probably carried out by al-Qaeda members, al-Qaeda Iraq doesn't have much to do with Osama bin Laden, but carried out by by al-Qaeda Iraq, ordinary Shia sort of wonder, you know, are Sunni politicians behind this? Who's orchestrating this?
Well, what's your speculation about that?
Well, I think a lot of it's straight sectarianism. I mean, the problem is that you know, just hasn't sort of gone away. You know, the one of the things is, you know, that in the U.S. the surge was talked up as if, you know, this was a great victory, and you know, that the surge was really a kind of a bit part in the sort of Iraqi, very vicious Iraqi sectarian civil war. The Sunni were attacking the Americans and the Shia. The Shia were counterattacking. The Sunni couldn't take that anymore, so they allied themselves with the Americans. I think that, you know, people are surprised at the just degree of violence still in Iraq, but it's partly that, you know, the surge was oversold. You know, General Petraeus was portrayed as if he was the man who brought peace to Iraq, despite this horrendous violence. And the U.S. media kind of stopped reporting it. You know, as you said, 64 dead. You know, where is that going to be? Is there any front page that's going to be reported on? I doubt it.
Right. Well, and of course, this whole theory about General Petraeus and his great victory has followed him in the news just in the last weeks. Every single article about how Petraeus is now going to be in charge in Afghanistan says, you know, because of his wonderful success and victory in Iraq, he has the ability to maybe go in there and replicate the same thing in Afghanistan. And it just goes without saying that the surge worked. Everybody knows that, according to the AP and the New York Times and the Washington Post and all the rest of them, too.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, it's weird how this sort of thing is sold, you know. You know, it's just, it's rather like, you know, the way that WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction, was sold before 2003, you know. It became just a given on every U.S. and British television or in most newspapers that, yeah, Saddam has WMD, you know. Question is where they are, how much, you know, but he has them.
Right.
But, and, you know, you've got to get endless people out of think tanks who, you know, sat there on CNN or wherever pontificating as if they knew all this. You know, it was all rubbish. But now you see exactly the same people cropping up, looking, you know, looking pompous, looking knowledgeable, assuring everybody, you know, that the surge worked and Petraeus is now going to do or try to do the same thing in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, it was the kind of crap then, and it's crap now.
Well, it is notable, and I kind of hope it goes down in the history books this way, too, that all of the participants in the media consensus for the Iraq War are all still there, and none of the people who got it right and said, don't do this, got any credit for it whatsoever, got any kind of, you know, Eric Margolies used to be welcome on TV until he said, don't do this, don't do this. And now he's persona non grata and he'll never be on TV again. You know, not in America anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing, really, to see these same old faces, you know, the same old talking heads that, you know, have a proven track record of getting things wrong. But, you know, somehow, when it comes to, you know, producers booking people for TV shows, and they want a safe pair of hands, somebody who's not going to say something heretical. So you say hear the same old guys coming and go back. You know, it's very frustrating, particularly, you know, for American reporters in Iraq, people on the ground, who often are pretty good, you know, often what actually they do for their newspapers or... don't know how much of it, and for television, a lot of that never appears, is they got a pretty good idea what's really happening, you know, and they really have sat with them. They really seethe with anger and frustration when they find op-eds by, you know, people who they regard as, you know, completely, you know, as not as experts on Iraq and closer to being con men. Or they see them, if you know, if they're in television, on the screen pontificating as before.
Now, it seems like a lot of the violence in the headlines in Iraq recently have been assassinations of the leaders of the Awakening Councils. These are the Sunni resistance leaders who, as you were saying, at the tail end of 2006, the beginning of 2007, I guess, decided that they would stop fighting the Americans if they were allowed to patrol their own neighborhoods and whatever. And that was the deal that Petraeus cut, as Gareth Porter was emphasizing. And this Petraeus really told George Bush that whole thing about we're going to defeat the insurgency. That's off. We're going to give them money. You want me to do this or not? And Bush went ahead and went along with that. And yet the promise that Petraeus made them was that they would be brought into the government. They would be brought into the Iraqi army. And instead, they're all just getting killed. So that makes me wonder whether, you know, things like the bombings here, retaliation for that, whether we're about to head into a new cycle of violence here.
I don't know. I think what happened, you know, these guys, you know, one, they were being, the Sunni were being hammered by the Shia community. Secondly, the tribal leaders found Al-Qaeda was trying to take their authority. Thirdly, the tribal leaders were offered a lot of money. But, I mean, it was never... these guys were declaring a truce with the U.S. They weren't declaring a truce with the Iraqi government. They had rather a contradictory attitude to the Iraqi government. I mean, I talked to these Al-Fahwa guys, and I'd say, you know, what do you want? Well, we want jobs. You know, we want jobs that we used to have under Saddam Hussein, the security forces, and the army. Okay, what do you think of the Iraqi government? Ah, they're all traitors, you know. They kind of wanted to have it both ways. Now the Americans going, you know, they're under attack from Al-Qaeda, and they're also under attack, you know, they're not being protected, or they're under attack from the Iraqi government, which never much liked them anyway. So they're kind of being victims of a classic squeeze.
All right, everybody, we're talking with Patrick Coburn from The Independent in London. He's the author of the book Muqtada, which is so important. You ought to read it if you care about Iraq at all. And we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned. Anti-War Radio. right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Wharton, and I'm talking with Patrick Coburn. He's the bravest and best Western reporter, at least, to cover the Iraq War. I don't know all the Iraqi reporters, but as far as white guys go, this guy's, well, when the rest of the guys hole up in the green zone, he puts hangs a shirt up in the window and rides in cars to the scariest places in the entire war-torn country, and that includes in the worst of times as well. And so he deserves respect, and you deserve to read his work. And it's your war. Might as well learn about it, right? Okay, now, here's the thing. Patrick, you said kind of offhand there, you know, now that the Americans are going, I wonder if you still think that's right. You know, more and more they come up with excuses to get around that status of forces agreement. Of course, they're going to be nowhere near down to 50,000 by the end of August, and those 50,000 will be all combat troops, not no combat troops. And the Desert Ox, Odierno, as Jeff Huber calls him, is already saying, 2011, yeah, well, anyway, that's negotiable, et cetera, et cetera. We know that at least some of the guys in the Pentagon want to stay there, have air bases. They built an embassy the size of Liechtenstein or something in the center of Baghdad there. They can't just abandon that, can they? What's going to happen here?
Well, you know, there's going to be not all the arrows pointing in the same direction, you know. The Kurds would like the Americans to stay on, you know, as partly because they're allied to them, partly as a sort of a line between them and the Arabs in northern Iraq. The government sort of says they don't, but maybe they half do. The followers of Muqtada al-Sadr want them out when they're extremely powerful. I wouldn't go all the way with you. I think that you know, there's very strong pressures for them to be out. And I remember one thing about American presence there, that nobody sort of talks about it in the U.S. at the moment. But if things, you know, Iraq is a real violent place that people don't talk about because there are no American casualties, but this might go the other way. I mean, all you need is suddenly American casualties start rising in Iraq again. It becomes a political issue. People ask, you know, start asking, you know, what Obama's at. You know, the White House might well calculate it's safer there for them to be completely out.
Well, and now speaking of Muqtada al-Sadr, we've got this just mess of an election result here from, well, I guess 3 months ago now, where got, I guess, two major Shiite factions, the Kurdish factions, and then the Sunnis have made an alliance with this Alawi character, the former CIA agent and former you know, puppet prime minister there for a little while in 2004. And they still haven't, nobody's been able to pick a government. And Alawi's plurality keeps getting smaller because people keep assassinating his party members. And the Shiites can't get along because, I guess, bad blood between Muqtada al-Sadr and Nouri al-Maliki means that there is no compromise on what would seem to, you know, a Texan, you know, who doesn't really know, like me, to be the natural alliance, the former Iraqi National Alliance, after all.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the others don't trust Maliki to remain prime minister. They want him out because they think he's going to monopolize power. I mean, there's something else about Iraq which is worth mentioning. You know, it's an oil state. Yeah, sure, power is sort of kind of fragmented between the different groups. But if you can grab hold of the government, you know, you can grab hold of $60 billion, you know, and that's going to go up. You know, the biggest sort of supergiant oil field is in excess, reserves in excess of 5 billion barrels. The biggest supergiant oil fields in the world are all in southeast Iraq. So if you've got control of the government, potentially it'd be real powerful, regardless of how much support you got. That's really what made Saddam the kind of dictator he was.
But even then, I mean, in typical democratic form, it would seem like Sadr would say, fine, you can go ahead and be the prime minister, but you have to do what I say on the following issues, sharing the oil money with me, kicking the Americans out, etc. And yet they can't seem to get over their differences, these guys.
Well,
not that I'm rooting for them.
And, you know, it's that sort of lack of trust. And also, you know, Iraq remains a real violent place. It's not exactly a place full of the spirit of compromise.
All right. Well, Let me ask you about this. This morning at news.antiwar.com, Jason Ditz has a piece. Israeli Prime Minister expresses concern over possible U.S. pullout from Iraq. And he says that this could leave Israel vulnerable. It might even provoke an attack on Israel from the east. What role do you think that might play in deciding American policy?
You could say, you know, the Iraqi government, the present Iraqi government, you know, is sort of from the, you know, kind of the present prime minister comes from Maliki, comes from the Dawa party, you know, which is, you know, this is an Islamic party. It's not sympathetic to Israel, you know. I saw that somebody at CNN had been fired for expressing some sympathy to the death of the Shia spiritual leader, Fadlallah. But, you know, Maliki was expressing every sympathy, you know, to Fadlallah. It's, you know, that are they that are they friendly to Israel? No, not particularly. But, I mean, that was kind of known in the past. The idea that there's any threat from Iraq, I think, is kind of Netanyahu's exaggeration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was Netanyahu's policy, the clean break, to smash Iraq for Israel's benefit in the first place. So, you know, I don't want to hear it, regardless of if he doesn't like the consequences, frankly. Okay, but now let me ask you this, because this is really important, too. I read an article about the Mahdi army of Muqtada al-Sadr and how they are really working hard now on creating their own sort of Hezbollah parallel government, you know, sort of to hell with the green zone guys. And it looks like that could really end up being a rival power to the so-called government of Maliki or whoever ends up in that chair.
Well, it gets support, you know, that... these people used to have their own militia, you know. They've sort of closed that down for the moment, but they probably played a role in the middle of demonstrations of a shortage of electricity. You know, you talk to any Iraqi, and particularly those who don't have money, but even those who do, you know, they're really fed up with the government just because it can't, you know, years pass, billions of dollars are spent. You know, there's no electricity, there isn't fresh water. So there's an enormous amount of sort of social resentment there and a feeling that the government, you know, is made up of racketeers. Now, if, you know, that support goes behind Muqtada al-Sadr, then that's very dangerous for the government.
Well,
you know, there's a great sort of, you know, it's like... you know, it's like the oil well in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a great... potentially there could be a real blowout of social, not just discontent, but fury, you know, unless the government does manage to provide the basics for living. But I think that, you know, that Iraqis, all Iraqis have this sort of welling resentment that things aren't better, you know. Under Saddam were things good? No, but they had some security. You know, now there are still 5 million refugees in a country of 30 million. You know, that's a big proportion. Life is still insecure and pretty unpleasant. And under Saddam, they could see why this was happening because of the dictatorship, because of sanctions. Now they wonder, you know, when are things going to get better? So there's still, you know, potential for explosion there.
Yeah, and you've said before the city of Baghdad compares only to Mogadishu and Kabul as far as you know, hellholes on earth and you know violence.
I found Kabul much better. You know, I'd walk around Kabul quite easily, but not Baghdad. Mogadishu, I'd never tried. I'm told it's a real bad idea.
Amazing. All right, and now real quick, if you could just give us a word or two about the future of Iraq.
The future of Iraq, well. You know, I think the future, you know, is going to be fairly violent. You know, it's still pretty unstable. You know, maybe it'll get a little bit better, but, you know, the signs are pretty slow. You know, it's a city. You go around the 1,500 checkpoints in Baghdad, there are walls everywhere, and still we have these sort of bombs going off. So, you know, is it better than it was? Yeah, but, you know, that still, as you just said, makes it one of the more dangerous places on the planet.
All right, well, I appreciate your time very much on the show and your insight into this war, as always, Patrick.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, we'll be right back. We've got Jeff Huber coming up next.